Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Hi, folks. Thanks for joining me. I have the pleasure and privilege of sitting down and having a chat with Harrison Pitt from New Culture Forum, European Conservative, and lots of other things that you do. Thanks so much for being here.
Pleasure.
And taking the time to sit down and have a little chat. So I thought we'd just talk about the state of Britain and British politics, right? Because at the moment, there's a strange tendency, and I don't know whether you've seen this, for government by Netflix special. This, of course, was evident with the Channel 4, the Netflix documentary that Keir Starmer mistakenly called this fictional program, Adolescence, which became a something of a moral panic amongst our ruling class. But also, Channel 4 recently put out a documentary about the grooming gangs, and I saw Sarah Champion retweeting this today, the Rotherham Labour MP, who was honestly one of the first people to start speaking out solidly about this, so to her credit, saying that we need various proper investigations or inquiries or something done about the grooming gangs. But this kind of is a bit of an issue, isn't it? Because, I mean, one, we know everything that happened. We've had lots of inquiries. We know why it was done. We know who it was done to. And we know the tremendously awful results that have occurred from it and the fact that it's still going on today. So I'm not even sure what an inquiry or investigation or whatever it is they want would actually accomplish. But I'm also worried about the fact that our MPs are so dim, that generally this seems to be Britain is governed by whatever the most compelling piece of TV they've watched is. What do you think about this?
Well, it's a classic textbook case of elites who already know what they want to achieve in politics and already know the kind of policies that they want to promote, trying to manufacture consent for them, and also trying to neutralize a populace that is feeling increasingly seized by righteous indignation because of what has been happening to the British people over the last 30 to 40 years. Certainly since 1997, despite endless imported horrors from endemic knife crime, industrial rape gangs, you mentioned, of course, Islamist intimidation in local and national politics, even terrorist incidents. There is always this need to try and maintain the ragged tapestry of multiculturalism as best they can, and therefore, at best, to imply that yes, we face these imported challenges, but we also face some horrible indigenous challenges that also need to be kept under wraps. And gosh, we need to make sure that you have this kind of phantom threat of the far right. So there's this sort of false pursuit of balance to try and make out that the problem isn't really what the problem is, and that's the best version of it. And the worst is to engage in like deliberate falsifying propaganda that effectively invents crimes where they do not exist. And so in the case of Adolescence, you actually watched it. I've not watched it. And so you actually had quite an interesting take on it. I saw on the podcast, which was quite meta. And I expect beyond the intentions of the actual creators, I should expect, namely that it is a very, in many ways, quite a powerful artistic testament to the loss of manliness in our societies, I suppose, was your chief point.
And the current state of affairs as well, because since the sort of institution of the, I hate to just crassly call it the Blairite paradigm, but that's really what it is, the loss of authority in the institutions themselves as well. And so generally the quality of everything represented in Adolescence is very poor. Nobody likes the place they're in. Nobody's getting good at their jobs. And it's a cascading series of failures on every single level.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I just think that this might have worked So this attempt to manufacture consent for policies that are, well, it's not even manufacturing consent. You're trying to retroactively justify policies that have already been pursued and potentially manufacture consent for more policies, in particular online censorship, to try and tame British public opinion. The problem today, of course, is that this isn't true of all generations, but particularly of my generation, the Zoomers, and even to some extent of millennials. People opt into their own sort of media experiences these days. We're not living in the age where there are just, say, five TV channels and everyone's watching the same thing and can therefore be supplied with a uniform media diet. Like we do to some extent choose our own media diet. And so it isn't noticeable in a way that they did choose to put this on Netflix rather than on something like Channel 4, because Netflix is in fact one of those companies that testifies to the way in which our media ecosystem has been disrupted. So maybe that was a clever move on their part. But I also think that people in Britain, they're not hugely knowledgeable about the exact situation in which we find ourselves. So for example, we mentioned this on the podcast today, the vast majority of British people think that net immigration, or the median British voter thinks that net immigration is running at about 70,000 a year, when in fact it's north of a million.
Yeah.
So they're not very well informed about the nuts and bolts and the details, and nor should they be. You're probably a little bit mental if you take too obsessive an interest in what's going on in day-to-day politics. But they do have very strong intuitions, and they are aware that whenever they do read about a stabbing, whenever they do read about a terrorist attack, or whenever they do read about or see an instance online of third world behavior on the streets of Britain, when they see,
or when they see it in their daily lives,
or when they see Birmingham filled to the rafters with rubbish, like they know what the true sources of social dysfunction in our society are, and it's not innocent looking 13-year-old white boys who are causing these problems. And so the attempt to try and race swap, I don't think is going to be successful. And I will make one more point as well. I forget whether it was Juvenal or Cicero who said that if you want a docile population, give them bread and circuses. I think it might have been Juvenal, actually. And this is a very clever way in which you can, rulers who are badly motivated can sap the people over whom they're ruling of the kind of civic virtue that would give them the power to resist and to say, no, we're not going to tolerate that. It makes sense for a tyrant or for a tyrannical regime to want their people to be as domesticated as possible. And to some extent, Netflix already performs this function, as does, I would argue, pornography and all the
video games
and Deliveroo. And it's not to attack those things necessarily, because I'm no certain person in this room who's very keen on video games.
But it doesn't seem
to have domesticated you.
No, Joe Rogan got in a lot of trouble a couple of years back by saying, well, video games are kind of a waste of time, aren't they?
Yeah, it's
like, yeah, they're entertainment, they're relaxation.
I just want to keep the audience on side.
Yeah, well, I like video games as much as anyone else, but like, it's true, they're not productive.
Well, yes, indeed. And I think that our elite political class has missed a trick here. Rather as they did with the Gamergate thing, it makes more sense given their long-term goals, and which are very unjust. Basically, we're talking about the successful end of replacement migration being achieved. If you're trying to do that, it makes sense to keep people as docile and as domesticated as possible. And if you're then invading the very things that do that, like Netflix or gaming, with your own very brazen political messaging, it's going to have exactly the reverse effect. It's going to radicalize them. It's not, which I think is a good thing. But
Which is why we're here now.
certainly in your case, given in your origins with the Gamergate, but I'm unaware of anyone apart from people who already agree with the objectives of the regime who sees adolescence as anything but a very brazen case of regime propaganda. And so if anything, it's more likely to wake people up than it is to send them further to sleep, which you would imagine should be their plan. So I think they've missed a trick there.
So what's interesting is there was a natural reaction to adolescence before anyone had even actually seen it. When it was announced, people understood, oh, it's a white boy who's the stabber, is it? And so you're exactly correct. So we learned the other day that it was 150 stabbings a day in Britain, which I just was not the case when I was young. I was your age. This was, just did not happen. But what I find interesting is you say, this is a conscious effort by the regime, a narrative control and about controlling people's thoughts. I have trouble believing it. I think they might actually be captured by their own emotions, because I agree completely with your characterization that the Blairite multiculti internationalist project is fraying at the edges.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fraying in the middle, in fact. You know, the very center of it is coming apart. And I think that the people in Parliament at the moment are overwhelmingly committed to the paradigm. They are either themselves DEI hires, they were on shortlists in both Conservative and Labour, and have worked their way up through the system by parroting the system's own sayings and phrases and morality. And so I think the fact that it's clear that there's something else coming out from under it is frightening to them. And I also think they're a bit thick. I can't help but notice that, I mean, with Jacob Rees-Mogg gone, it's hard to think of a particularly bright politician. Even, like, Nigel Farage is smart enough, but I don't think he's conceptually advanced enough to establish this kind of like meta understanding of the current state of the country, right? I think he's still very much trapped in the institutions are failing, quality of life is going down, therefore we just need to improve the institutions to restore the quality of life. It's like, no, there's something much broader going on here, and we need to be able to really tangle with this. And I just don't think our politicians have got that kind of capacity. And so I think that actually when something like adolescence is thrown at their feet, I think a lot of them are kind of genuinely taken in by it, genuinely taken, oh, here's a way we can get the point across that we've got to stop young boys from watching Andrew Tate,
mm-hmm.
or else, or else the entire thing goes down. It's like, look, Andrew Tate isn't the hinge upon which the entire multicultural project revolves, actually. Mm-hmm. There are way worse problems than Andrew Tate. And so I think it's actually kind of a desperation that they're latching onto this thing. And because I think they can feel the sand slowly slipping through their fingers.
Yes, I expect that a great many of them are taken in by the propaganda more than they are
manufacturing
their own propaganda, yeah. more than they see themselves as cynically manufacturing it. And I think that there, as in most cases, most processes that go on in the world, there's very rarely a kind of single guiding intelligence. Which isn't to say that conspiracies don't happen. When people say you're conspiracy mongering. This is a very foolish
Anywhere
way.
Appropriate.
This is a foolish way of, yeah. foolish way of thinking. I mean, Julius Caesar was killed by a conspiracy. So conspiracies do exist.
Why has Fauci been pardoned retroactively back to 2014? Don't exist.
Exactly.
And just wherever it's appropriate.
And this sort of, that's exactly the point. But even when they do exist, often they are the result of a congruence of interests coming together. Not every single person involved necessarily has the same motivation.
Or even knows that there's a conspiracy.
Yeah. So I suspect there are quite a lot of people, maybe even the creators themselves, but certainly I would imagine the actors who are unlikely to be very bright, in adolescence, and indeed the politicians who've been taken in by it and have been having these sorts of theatrical seminars in Whitehall about how can we fight this fictional problem.
Nadia Whittam stands up and opines on it. It's like, okay.
Exactly. I don't much care for Kemi Badenoch, but people trying to rake her over the coals for not having watched it, which is just absurd. And frankly, I think she's handled herself very well when she's been pressed on those sorts of things. But yes, it will be a congruence of interest. But I do suspect that, and I can't prove this, but there must have been people involved some way along the line in the process who are well aware of what crime rates in Britain really are like, who are well aware of what disaggregating crime according to ethnicity and race and religion will yield in terms of statistical demographic results, who nevertheless decided that it would be more politically correct and it would be to basically pin many of these imported problems on innocent young members of the host population, like people like me, like people like my younger brothers. I think it is a grotesque instance of race swapping, and I think that many of the people involved would have known exactly what they were doing, even if Nadia Whittam isn't up to scratch on it.
See, I'm genuinely worried at this point that, and loath as I am to hoist myself on my own petard here, but I mean, did you watch Chernobyl? Right, so in that they do a very good job of representing the kind of communist mindset of it's not even that they know something's wrong, but they don't necessarily know the exact details of what's wrong. Mm-hmm. But because for political reasons and reasons of ideology, they don't look into it all that hard, right? And so when it finally gets to the point where the guy's like, well, look, the nuclear power plant's exploding, there's graphite on the roof. The other guy just says, and there's no graphite on the roof, because logically, according to the ideology, there's not. I'm not sure that our politically correct establishment have looked sufficiently at the statistics and the people involved in creating adolescence. I'm not sure they do know. And it's not that, I mean, I think to them, this is a kind of part of their mind that they have to kill off. Say, well, no, that would be far right. So I can't look into that, let alone, you know, I mean, I think they'll just look at the aggregated statistics and say, knife crime's 150 a day. Well, I'm not going to break that down by ethnicity. and so for them, it might, and I'm not saying this is true. Like I said, I can't prove this either.
Yeah.
But I genuinely worry that we're being guided by people who are too afraid to look at the details and are genuinely not all that bright and are ideologically captured. And so this is a real concern I have. I mean, like I said, I don't know if it's true or not. But.
Well, yes, I think that it's hard to think of a time in British history where the caliber of MP has been as low as I would argue it is today. Like many of them are just pretty like naked ethnocentric tribalists. Like we've got at least four of those people.
And that's the best of them.
And that's the best of them. Oh, and not for us, by the way. Not for us. Without saying.
We've got the thickies.
Yes, and even the other day, you and I are both slightly, well, quite considerably disappointed in the way that Farage has been operating lately. But leaving that aside, when he was speaking in Parliament on Wednesday, which is to say yesterday, we're filming this on Thursday, and pointing out how many of the people coming in on small boats and you know being given bed and board at taxpayers' expense and often loitering outside playgrounds and loitering outside schools and all this sort of things come from alien cultures. That's the word that Farage used. All of a sudden, I think they were Lib Dems or maybe Greens on the bench just behind him, which is like just looked absolutely horrified that he would point out what seems to me to be the blindingly obvious. And so
they must be from alien cultures, otherwise how are they illegal immigrants?
I mean, alien just descends from the Latin foreign word for other.
Yeah, so, exactly. How could they not be alien to our culture? They're not the British refugees.
Yes, exactly. So it's absurd, and you're right. It's not that they what we're talking about here. We're talking about the difference between people who use ideological projects as a pretext for what they want to do, which is more cynical, and the difference between them and true believers.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to know. Like, we only really know from, we can try and infer from people's actions, of course. So for example, let me see if I can think of an example of this. I would argue that someone like Owen Jones is in large part a genuine true believer in the whole sort of like woke utopian
Jeremy Corbyn
drive. I think Corbyn is as well.
I think he's obviously a true
clearly
believer.
And so here, so for those people, their opt-in
to
this ideology is having read the requisite thinkers. It is maybe not in Corbyn's case, but in Jones's case, having read the requisite thinkers, really believing it that this is what justice in the real world looks like. And I think they're wrong about all this. And it may be true that they're partly driven to it by unhappiness in their own personal life as well. But leaving that aside, just like engaging with the arguments themselves and like what has driven them to that position. It is genuinely a sort of disinterested moral theory about how the world should be. And those are your true believers. And those are the people who are going to be ideologically blinkered when it comes to noticing facts that count against their ideological presupposition. So here we're talking about the kind of people who, if I were to say, well, why don't you disaggregate that data according to ethnicity? They wouldn't even say, oh, I've done it and I've come to this conclusion. They'd say, what a horrifying thought that we should
racist.
Even do that. And they may even say, well, this epistemic tool is itself tainted by white supremacy. That is the argument that many of them do make.
If so, they knew what the word epistemic
means. Which they don't. But
they would absolutely
but they
say
would,
that.
They would cite thinkers who do know what the word epistemic means in order to make the claim that there is something illicit about even taking an interest in this sort of data. So those are your true believers. And so these are people who are ideologically blinkered and they're obviously of varying degrees of intelligence, but there is morally disinterested commitment to a certain worldview. I think other people and a good example here would be someone maybe like Humza Yousaf. We know for a fact that Humza Yousaf isn't against...
Probably Sadiq Khan too.
And Sadiq Khan, probably true. We know for a fact, certainly in Humza Yousaf's case, this is not a man who's against, say, blood and soil ethnic nationalism in principle.
He's very public about it.
Very publicly in favor of it in Pakistan. Yeah. When he went there, he even said, I speak to you as a son of the soil of Pakistan, which is the sort of thing which if an actual Celtic Scotsman said about Scotland, Humza Yousaf would probably
declare him white.
Declare him white and probably try and throw him into prison. Yeah. So obviously he's not first minister anymore, but in other words, I think that Owen Jones's opt-in to what we might call race communism is to some extent morally sincere and driven by disinterested moral belief. Whereas I think someone like the more tribalistic minorities in parliament, they just see this as a very convenient way to further certain ethnic objectives, which are actually not morally disinterested whatsoever, but they're actually very ethnically partial. So I think that Jones is to some extent a universalist about the importance of the ideology, whereas other people just see it as a tool to achieve very particularist ends. And sometimes those ends will be like the furtherance of ethnic ends. And maybe in other cases, it will just be the desire to acquire more and more power.
They're completely open about it. The leader of the Scottish Labour Party
just came
out and said this the other day.
Yes.
We will have more Pakistanis in charge. We are going to gain power in this country. And it's like, oh, I didn't realize that was on the table.
Yeah.
I thought that we were disinterested moral universalists.
Exactly.
But the thing that worries me about what you're saying is I think you're correct, right? I think that is correct. And the thing that worries me is that the number of cynical Machiavellian agents in the British Parliament who are native British is very low, I think. Because I think the system has self-selected for Owen Jones-style true believers in the Blairite project. And I think that's why Tony Blair himself, the arch Machiavellian operator, is coming out and essentially reining in the excesses of the Labour Party, because he's like, what are you fools doing? Don't you know the plan? You're going to ruin everything. And I think that's one of his main and their main complaints about the Conservative Party. Like, Boris, I don't think he's actually that Machiavellian. I think he's a moron. Well, not a moron, but like...
He's frivolous.
I think he believes he is a lib, right? He's fundamentally a lib. And I think he's got the dreamy lib opinion that actually all of this can just work. And so the Conservatives, when they're just like ratcheting up the immigration, I think that Tony Blair's objection is that they're going to cause the system to crash.
Mm.
They're going to ruin the Blairite project by making it awful.
They're going to bring it into disrepute.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe that is what he thinks.
And I genuinely think that's why he's interceding with Keir Starmer right now.
Mm.
Because I think Starmer himself is a true believer. And there's plenty of him explaining his philosophy and human rights. I mean, like before he was the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer would go to places like Jamaica and intercede on behalf of child murderers to get them off the death penalty for free. He would do this pro bono. It's like, look, you have to be a true believer.
Yes.
If you would like to see the full version of this premium video, please head over to lotuseaters.com and subscribe to gain full access to all of our premium content.